Now, broadcasting on Star Worldwide Networks, it's time for the Fashion Rewired broadcast with Brian Hill. During the Fashion Rewired podcast, we chat with successful fashion designers and business entrepreneurs who share their powerful stories of success while providing real-time industry tips, tools, and actionable strategies to execute today, with the goal of designing our listeners' brands for success. Now, here's your host, Brian Hill.
Welcome to Fashion Rewired. I'm your host, Brian Hill, self-taught designer and executive director of Phoenix Fashion Week. So why is it important to rewire? Well, I believe that every successful fashion designer and entrepreneur at one time or another made the smart and necessary decision to rewire their brain, their attitude, but most importantly, their actions to get them to their current level of success. Each week, I get to share stories of transformation with our listeners while giving you the blueprint to rewire. I love to open each episode by thanking the sponsors that believe in Fashion Rewired. The Phoenix Fashion Week Freelance Program. While building Phoenix Fashion Week into an effective fashion industry resource, we have been asked time and time again to recommend the services of our teammates and associates. So the natural next step has been to organize a system and network of fashion professionals that we could vouch for in the marketplace. The Phoenix Fashion Week Freelance Program is open to anyone needing fashion design, hairstyling, sales representation, photography, graphic design, web design, marketing, social media, styling, makeup artists, accessory design, videography, modeling, PR, event planning, and consulting. For more information, please email freelance@phoenixfashionweek.com. My next guest hails from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, and provides an important spotlight on Black History Month. Elizabeth, her friends call her Dory Tunstall, is a design anthropologist, public intellectual, and design advocate who works on the intersections of critical theory, culture, and design. As Dean of Design at Ontario College of Art and Design University, she's the first Black and first Black female Dean of a Faculty of Design anywhere in the world. She's been a pivotal figure in the decolonization of diversity, inclusion, and equity of higher education and design. On a global career for Dory, who served as Associate Professor of Design Anthropology and Associate Dean at Swinburne University in Australia, at the University of Illinois at Chicago, she organized the U.S. National Design Policy Initiative and served as Director of Design for Democracy. Industry positions include the UX strategy for Sapient Corporation and ARC Worldwide. Dory holds a PhD in anthropology from Stanford University and a Bachelor of Arts in Anthropology from Bryn Mawr College. Most recently, Dory helped Ontario College University address 144 years of zero representation of Black full-time faculty in the Faculty of Design and 142 years of zero representation of Indigenous faculty in the Faculty of Design. Dory, let me first say bravo for your trailblazing work. And wow, that was a lot.
Thank you.
When you hear all those things you've already done at such a young age, what do you think?
I'm not such a young age.
It's relative.
I mean, I'm fortunate in many cases to become parts of communities that really want to make a change. And my role most of the time is to get rid of institutional barriers that prevent change from happening. And since I just believe everything is possible, that most of the time I've been really fortunate to work with people who are willing to take the risk to make something new and different happen in ways that open up new possibilities for people, right? We're designers, right? We create new possibilities for people. And so I've been in good environments where people are willing to do the work to do that.
Well, that's a great perspective to take. You deflect a lot of attention off of yourself because you've been a behemoth, right? A beast. So amazing. But you always bring it back to being around in a great community. So I love that perspective. So being in design and fashion and world and creating this new path for anthropology, tell me one fun fashion fact of Dory Tunstall.
One fun fashion fact?
Yes.
My favorite fashion item is these gold boots from Stuart Weitzman that they made for J-Lo, but then produced more versions of. So it's my favorite fashion item because no matter, they're like these thigh-high sequined gold boots. Mm-hmm. And so if I ever show up at something, some event wearing those, it always people are always surprised because they think, oh, she's a dean or, oh, she's whatever. And when you rock gold sequined thigh-high boots, then all of a sudden they have to reconceptualize, like, who you are and what you mean. And so all of a sudden, whatever preconceived notions they may have had of you go away.
Wow.
And you get to redefine yourself. So I love wearing some fashion thing that makes people reconceptualize who I am and then allow me to really, again, introduce and define myself.
Right, right. That's excellent. My producer, Robin, gave the thumbs up. She has these really tall boots, not thigh high, but she is in the same family as you. She loves those, so yay. That's a great fun fact. Well, obviously, in your intro, so many different things you've done already. Just trailblazing, right? First of this and first of that. When you and I first met, I read a great article about you in Fast Company magazine, and I just said, I was also a first of, I think, right? Maybe the first African-American to produce a Phoenix Fashion Week in the nation. And I didn't even know it until I thought about it, right? And you're like, you know, first ofs are pretty cool. And so to get you on the podcast in this historic month of Black History, it was really, really cool. Tell me and the listeners, what drives Dory today?
Creating the conditions in which there will be no other Black first.
I love it.
That's what drives me today. You know, getting in there and you know, I've talked about before, like, in many ways, if you're a first, you're a super token. And what I mean by that is that you're so talented in one way or another that the institution, the systems want your talent so badly that they forget the fact that most of them are set up to reject your body, your identity, who you are as a Black person, right? Or any other kind of BIPOC, marginalized individual. And so that means you have two responsibilities. One, to use those talents to dismantle all the systems that have kept everyone else out except for you.
Yes.
Right? And then your second responsibility is to represent, because the one good thing about being the first is that there's no template for who you are as a leader.
Right.
And so if you are the most authentic expression of yourself, that means any other person who comes into that role will understand that the way in which to approach it is to just be who they are.
Yes.
And not have to follow some preconceived notion of who they're supposed to be as a leader.
Right, right. I love that. And, you know, with everything happening and everyone has their own story, here at Phoenix Fashion Week, it may not be the most fashion-forward city in someone's mind, but we always, like you said, redefine the preconceived notions of what we built. And as I look at our body of work from day one, it's always been diverse. It's always been, everyone's been involved. We didn't have to put it on a billboard and say, look at us now, we share with people. We did from day one, right? And I love that. And like you said, if anyone's following behind me and they want to be a minority owner of a fashion week, they should be themselves. And because there was no preconceived notions of what I should do, I just was me, right? And that seemed to work. And I love how you describe that. That's excellent. I feel good about myself now. Thank you.
Yeah, as you should. I mean, again, the thing that people, well, they do remember, but sometimes they don't really take into consideration is that there's a lot of pressure that comes with being a first, right? Because you have to represent for community who are all looking at you.
Yes.
You have to, again, maintain your authenticity in situations where everyone's trying to tell you who you are and how you're supposed to do things.
Yes.
And so to be, my indigenous colleagues call it a pathbreaker, right? Mm-hmm. To be a pathbreaker.
Because
you don't want to catch things on fire all the time. But to be a pathbreaker, like there's a lot of responsibility that comes with that role.
Right, right.
And that puts a lot of pressure.
Yeah. So, you know, some people would think that you've been like this from day one, but I know that people have different rewires throughout their careers and lives. And with you, maybe it was around 2009 as I read your notes, but maybe you could tell us about your rewire where you went to a different direction and why.
Well, I went all the way to Australia.
That's a new direction.
Is that on the map? Yeah, it's, you know, in 2009, I was trying to figure out, you know, where I wanted to pivot. And mm-hmm. I knew I wanted to go deeper into leadership because I had been doing the work with Design for Democracy. I had this really amazing mentor in Rick Raffet, the executive director of AIGA. And so I was looking at his role and I said, I think I want to do that. Mm-hmm. I think I want to lead. I want to lead design organizations. Mm-hmm. That's what I said.
Mm-hmm.
And what did it take to, what did I need to know? Like, what education? Do I need to get an MBA? Do I need to do all this?
Mm-hmm.
But I knew I needed to demonstrate more leadership. Mm-hmm. And again, I've done leadership before, but I needed to do more, right? And so I had the opportunity to go to New York, which is, you know, everyone's like, why don't I move to New York? Go to New York and take a position there.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't going to give me leadership mm-hmm. in the way that I knew I needed it.
Mm-hmm.
Or I could move all the way to Melbourne, Australia,
mm-hmm.
Where they were going to give me an opportunity to be a leader, right? So they created a position called an Associate Dean Learning and Teaching. It didn't exist before.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like my real super substantive leadership role in which, again, I was, you know, leading the conditions of possibility, right, for about, you know, 200 and so faculty members. I had, you know, 2,400 students.
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, like, how do you communicate with people? How do you create a vision? How do you evaluate people? How do you hire and fire people? All of these things I learned by taking that first administrative leadership role. Because I needed to be a leader, I needed to know how systems work
mm-hmm.
so that as a designer, I would know how to hack those systems to make it work better
right.
for more people. And so I've never regretted that decision. My family was encouraging but thought it was crazy for me to move all the way to Australia. They couldn't even, like, say Melbourne.
Yeah.
But all of my leadership experiences that have come out of that, like, I was so prepared after spending 6 years to come into the role at OCAD University as dean.
Right. So when you go back and talk about your friend that kind of inspired you to go more into leadership and learn and rewire to become a leader, you're already leading, like you said, but in reality, you were becoming an entrepreneur within a corporation, right? You had to mm-hmm. then do all the same things that an entrepreneur does on his own, but within a corporate setting to some degree. But you had to be as nimble, right? You had to be as mm-hmm. resourceful and learn new things on the fly, like you just said. But I want to find out, why did you feel you wanted or had to do that?
Because, you know, if one of the things that, like, I run right now a $14 million budget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, you know, for some corporations, that's not a lot of money, but it's a substantial amount of money in my experience.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize when you're in administration that every decision you're making, whether it's hiring, whether it's what new program or course you need to run, is actually a business decision.
Yes.
It's actually a business decision that when you hire a new person, they're going to bring on new skills and capabilities, which will allow you to expand. And, you know, like the Black Cluster hire that we did,
mm-hmm.
this has allowed me to connect deeper to Black communities in a way that we're seeing a quote-unquote a return on investment because now we have more Black students who are wanting to come to OCAD University.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they're paying, you know, tuition, if they're domestic, $8,000 a year. If they're international, $24,000 a year. Right,
right, right.
So there's a way in which I think people think, oh, because I'm in the educational sector, that, and again, not to say that education is a business, its drivers are different. But the kind of decisions you have to make as an executive to understand how money and resources play into your ability to make a new reality,
right?
Make a new reality for people. Those are I could go work for a Fortune 500 company and I would be doing exactly the same kind of decision making that I'm doing here now.
Sure.
As a dean. Right. I could run my own business and still use the same decision making that I'm doing as as a dean of design at OCAD. So I'm an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And because I've had such experience, I worked in high-tech consulting. I've had all this previous experience that was really important. I bring that to the work and the decisions that I do in design, like as a dean. All the design tools, design thinking tools that I did like 15 years ago working at large corporations, mm-hmm. like Sapient and whatever, mm-hmm. I use those same tools. Like we build personas around mm-hmm. who our faculty types we want to be and who our design students that we want to have. And I share those with my faculty and they use them and we workshop. In the same way that, like I said, if I was running a company, I would still be asking, the people who work with me to make these kinds of decisions and use the same kinds of tools.
Right. Well, I agree. I think that everyone's an entrepreneur in their life and also their business, because every decision you make, even in your home life with your children, your spouse, et cetera, it's all so business decisions, right? And you're managing mm-hmm. budgets and all those kinds of things. And that's what's really cool about being an entrepreneur, that you just realize there are different layers in your life where these same kinds of decisions are made. You just didn't realize it. So for mm-hmm. you, it sounds like your very first step, because I love to put them in steps for people to follow, is you chose to rewire. Your step one was you actually chose to rewire, right? Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. what was the second step? When you went down to Melbourne, what did you next do after you chose to rewire and then become this new leader and learn all these new skill sets? What did you do second?
Assembled a team or was thrown into a team, but actually trying to figure out of the people who are there with me, whom I can work with, who shared a similar vision, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. who had the skills that I didn't have. Like one of the people I worked most closely with is Deidre Barron, mm-hmm. who was another associate dean. Mm-hmm. And it was really important for us to work closely together because I was the new person with all the innovations, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm, I'm like, mm-hmm. let's do this new. Why are we doing this way? We mm-hmm. should be doing it this way. She was the person with the institutional and policy history.
Yes.
So I would have a good idea and she would say, well, this would work in this way, but not work in the way which you expected. This is the system that you would have to follow in order to be able to do that, right? So And so in that sense, it was really important to have to understand who my team was mm-hmm. and who are the people that I could work with, so that we can make things possible and not out of, take the innovation that I was bringing in the sense of my newness meant I just had a totally different way of thinking about things,
right.
But have it really grounded in the systems that were there, so that I can know where to hack the system to be more effective and efficient, or where I just need to understand that this is a constraint. And again, as designers, we also like constraints because it just tells us where we need to move laterally in order to solve the problem, right?
Right, right. I love it. So build a solid team with a shared vision. Like, I love that. And mm-hmm. then if you're talking about step three, right? You notice you say hack a lot. You hack the system a lot, you being a designer. Do you think that was a clear third step? What was your third step to success down in Australia?
Yeah, I mean, I use the term hack because I grew up with way too much science fiction. And my first job was in high-tech consulting, right? Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. That's the lingo. But again, there's one of my favorite books that was given to me when I was 27 years old to read is called The Tempered Radical mm-hmm. by Deborah Meyerson. And the person gave it to me when I was 27 because they noticed that I like to make change happen.
Yes.
But I had to learn that I can make change happening without completely destroying the system, or more likely destroying myself, because I'm not listening to the way in which the system works.
Right.
Right. So hacking becomes important because to hack, you have to understand the system better than the system understands itself.
Sure.
And then you go in and you find that pivot point, right, where you can say, the system wants to go this way, but if I reconnect it in this other way, again, it might be more efficient and much more effective. It may connect in a different way. It'll still flow. That's the hacking, mm-hmm. But it'll flow in a different way in a different direction, which will have different outcomes. And so Like, there's certain work that's about dismantling systems, but I like the ideal of hacking, because what you're doing is you're finding the hole in the system and you're patching it up with something new that gets the system to move in a different direction, in a better way.
Right.
Relying on the code, right? The code of behaviors, the code of assumptions, relying upon those things in order to move the organization in a different direction.
I love it. I'm keeping hack the system in as your third step. It's and it's great, because at Fashion Week, we work with emerging designers, and we created this thing called the boot camp. The boot camp was me being an emerging designer and all the things that, like, you learned that you were going through and have gone through. And then we hack the system, so to speak, to help young designers get out of their own way and put together a system of structured steps to run a better business, right? And I'm now going to use hack the system, because that's what we did. And so I totally see that now. So we know that when people have action steps, Dory, in their career, when they rewire, that natural habits come out of those rewires, right? So can you tell me a few habits that you still live with today that you apply at OCAD that came from your rewire in Australia?
Follow the money.
Okay.
Only because that tells you where people assign value, right? It tells you where people assign value. And part of that, I say, you know, all budgets are finite. So it is about what priorities that you have. So for example, you know, our Black Cluster hire that we had, it's not like we got additional money to do that. We said, of the resources that we have, we're going to prioritize this as something important to our institution. So following the money tells you where your values are. And then again, you can realign those values to things, again, using the resources that you have existing.
Oh, I love
that. So I do that a lot.
I love that.
The other thing I do is always bring the most vulnerable people in the room when you're making a decision.
It's better
if they're vulnerable, or if they're in the room themselves, but if not, make sure that you're bringing an understanding of the impact of that decision on them, on the most vulnerable in every decision that you make, because that's your ethical and moral compass. How do I make things better? How do I bring more self-determination, more agency to those who are going to be potentially negatively impacted by any decision that comes out of that room?
Wow.
And in fashion, all the things that we talk about now in terms of, like, again, your supply chain and, you know, child labor you know, zero sort of carbon, all these things we're talking about, it's like, okay, the environment is really vulnerable to these decisions. You know, people who might be manufacturing our fashions are very vulnerable to this decision I'm going to make at this moment right now. So I need to bring that vulnerability into the room so I understand or can imagine what impact it might have on them, and choose the decision that minimizes any negative impact on them.
Right. Well, I mean, imagine this. You could do this for your kids, right? Bringing your kids into the room and helping them do a decision that's going to possibly negatively impact them in their homework or doing their chores, et cetera. And then when you talk about the fashion business, more manufacturers actually want to do a better job at manufacturing, but they were never asked. They just did the cheapest way. And that was a bad way for the environment. But now you see all these green companies and eco-friendly companies and sustainable companies coming out of nowhere, and they're working with the manufacturers that used to be in bad practice. That tells you what your habit of asking the most vulnerable people to be in the room for the decision-making has worked and will continue to work.
Exactly. And again, you know, this is following the money. If your decision is like, we just want to do things cheaper, then you're going to get cheap. If your decision is that we want to do things better for everyone, then you come up with a different set of decisions and you allocate your resources differently.
Right. Can you assign, there've been so many, but can you assign one large accomplishment that have come out of your actions in Australia that led to your habits at OCAD? Is there one big accomplishment you can really tie it to that backstory?
Yes. The thing that I'm most proudest of my time at Swinburne University is that we provided job opportunities for at least 6 or 7 Indigenous artists / designers.
Mm-hmm.
And so why that makes me extremely proud is, again, had to break down the system in order to demonstrate that these individuals were qualified based on their lived experience.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right. So some of them had degrees, others did not. But it's like, no, what we're valuing is their lived experience as Indigenous people.
Mm-hmm.
How that will transform the way in which we approach design. The thing that was really important is that providing them with, again, this academic credentials is that even when I left Melbourne, Australia, and we didn't have the program anymore, they were able to take those credentials that they received by teaching
mm-hmm.
and get other positions in other institutions.
Wow.
Right? And so the institutions, those other institutions, can't shut them out, right? Because they can demonstrate the qualifications. You need to have at least 2 years teaching experience, right?
Right.
They can demonstrate those qualifications through the opportunities that we created at Swinburne. And that's how you change institutions, but you change also people's lives, because the great thing about, you know, having this academic life is that it can be quite stable. You can sit down, and they talked about this, is like, now I can afford to buy a house.
Right.
Now I can afford to buy these things. Now I can afford to take in additional family members mm-hmm. to be able to support them, because I have that stability and knowing what my knowledge and skills can do, right?
That's fantastic. That is a huge accomplishment. So bravo for that. Man, believe it or not, we're already to the halfway point of the podcast, Dory. We're going to thank our sponsors, and then I'm going to take you into rapid-fire questions afterwards called the Garment District. Are you ready for that?
I'm ready.
All right, hang on. Fact, each season, Phoenix Fashion Week turns away hundreds of emerging fashion designers that apply for the Live Designer Bootcamp. This year, we created the 6-week-long Digital Designer Bootcamp, where emerging fashion talent from around the world and from the comfort of their own home via mobile, laptop, or desktop will follow a structured curriculum online focused on the very important business side of their fashion brands. In a short 6 weeks, the fashion experts will teach, transform, and lay out the blueprint to build and run a successful fashion brand for 2021 and beyond. To apply, email digital@phoenixfashionweek.com. And we're back, Fashion Rewired the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Hill. I'm on with design anthropologist Dory Tunstall, all the way up in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. She's been dropping amazing information for us, gold nuggets of information, and it is Black History Month, so man, oh man, just so many great things, Dory. So now I've got you in the Garment District. Some rapid-fire questions. I want you just to answer underrated or overrated, okay?
Okay.
Handwritten thank you notes.
Overrated.
Formal education.
I've never written one in my life.
Formal education, underrated or overrated?
Underrated.
Social media, underrated or overrated?
Overrated.
Vogue magazine, underrated or overrated?
Overrated.
Websites, underrated or overrated?
Underrated.
Phone conversations, underrated or overrated?
Underrated.
Love it, love it. I knew those answers already, by the way. When I'm talking to designers and educators and just entrepreneurs, I'm always talking about, are you a wholesale brand or a retail brand? So wholesale, you're big box, you're corporate, you're talking to the masses, or are you retail, more of a direct-to-consumer, one-on-one play? The Dory Tunstall brand, do you think you're wholesale or retail, and why?
I'm retail.
Okay.
I'm retail. But there's a part of me that wish I was more wholesale, only not because of the corporate side,
mm-hmm.
but because of like the mass side, like the connecting to multiple people.
Mm-hmm.
That's the part I really, really enjoy.
Gotcha.
But I'm definitely retail.
Well, we are talking and reaching a lot of people today. So you get a little bit of wholesale play today. So because you are a direct to consumer kind of a brand, Dory Tunstall, tell me the best sales platform or the best medium that works for Dory Tunsil to get your message out, direct to consumer, individuals?
Right now?
Yes.
Instagram.
Instagram, okay.
It's really Instagram.
Got it. And why is that?
Because it's still a space of authenticity. I mean, there is some fakery that does go on, mm-hmm. but you can use it as a space of authenticity. So if I post what I'm wearing mm-hmm. that day, again, people at least know for me it's something that I authentically believe in, right? Mm-hmm. And I normally are able to provide the reasons I believe within it. Mm-hmm. But it also is a platform where I can have lots of fun because it's not just about a photograph. I can make a movie.
Sure.
I can, you know, do a music video. All these different toys and techniques that you have to play with in order to be able to express yourself as
mm-hmm.
a brand.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Well, I know for a fact that when I get off of this podcast, I'm going to your Instagram to find those gold boots. Fact. Okay, could I find them there? Are you?
Yes, you can.
So since Instagram is your direct to consumer touch point, tell me who inspires you on social media. Who are you following and why?
I'm following a lot of indigenous beaders. Mm-hmm. So people like Catherine Blackburn, mm-hmm. Who's one of my favorite designers,
mm-hmm.
Sage Paul. I'm following lots of black artists and designers. You know, like my go-to design is Haute Couture.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really into Boten eyeglasses because they're very sustainable and they're made here locally in Toronto
mm-hmm.
and black-owned.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm supporting a lot of black and indigenous-owned businesses right now. That's
excellent.
Been really my focus.
Excellent.
And even already, like, I have an extensive collection of Indian artisan, like, you know, block print and other dyed and embroidered fabric, and all of them are Instagram, so I can follow them as well.
Oh, it's excellent. We're going to dig in and share some of those amazing artists and designers with our fans. Mm-hmm. Earlier, we talked about books before we got to books, and The Tempered Radical was one of your favorites. Is there a second book you could recommend for our readers, our listeners to read to succeed?
A business book, a fashion book, what kind of book?
You know what?
I read a lot of books.
Oh, man, I can imagine. Big brain, for sure. Whatever you feel is going to help a young designer get there, wherever there is for them.
Help a young designer get there. This sounds, like, very indirect, mm-hmm. But one of the books that I'm reading right now is called My Grandmother's Hands by... I always say this wrong, so I'm gonna just check. I'll tell you the preface, and then I'll get to the author in a second.
Okay.
What the book is really important, especially for right now where we are coming out of COVID-19 and George Floyd and everything, is that it talks about the trauma that we experience in our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And that trauma, if you're a black person, if you're a white person, if you're a police person, that the trauma you experience is in your body. So it's not, you can't think your way out of it. Your body tells you what you're feeling.
Right.
And so it's a workbook where it provides these breathing exercises and these, meditations in order to do it. So why this is really important from a business perspective, one of the people that I do follow on Instagram is Julian Christian Lutz,
mm-hmm.
Or AKA Director X.
Okay.
And he has an initiative called Operation Prefrontal Cortex, which is about teaching meditation to young people in order to, again, gain behavioral control, emotional control, et cetera, et cetera.
Wow.
One of the things that they talk about is that through meditation, you are calmer, which means you're able to make better business decisions,
mm-hmm.
make better, you have more creativity.
Mm.
So I've been really interested in how to create a more meditative state.
Okay.
Because then I'm more focused, that I don't get upset as much. A lot of people lose their jobs, right, because they get upset too much. That my creativity is better able to flow because I have a better sense of my mind. I have a better sense of my triggers, and I have a real process to think clearly about where I want to go next in whatever it is that I'm doing.
Wow. I love that. I love that. First of all, I just got thrown off a bit because I'm watching these gold boots now. I found the photo on Instagram of these gold boots.
Aren't they gorgeous?
Oh, my God.
Aren't they gorgeous?
You're gorgeous, and you have...
Oh, thank you.
Okay, my grandmother's hand, love it, and the tempered radical.
Yeah, okay, so now I finally have the author. This is terrible. So it's by Resma Menakem. So R-E-S-M-A-A Menakem, M-E-N-A-K-E-M. So my grandmother's hands,
awesome.
Racialized trauma and the pathway to mending our hearts and our bodies. And again, this is the thing where as a young person in particular, it's one of the keys to success is being clear and being focused. And if you are responding to your environment with a sense of trauma that hasn't been resolved, guess what? It means you're not being clear.
Wow.
And it means you're having more difficulty being focused because you're so distracted by all your responses to the things around you.
Right. Reactive versus proactive. I love that.
Exactly.
I can't wait to check out Director X, too. I haven't done meditation, but I really have in 2020, Dory, tried to calm myself. Mm-hmm. And I feel better. I feel I make better decisions in 2021. And I want to continue down this path, right? So build confidence in this more like meditative state, like you said. And so I thank you for that advice. I'm going to take you back because, again, when we first started this whole conversation, it sounded like you were perfect always. So I'm going to take you back to the day before you were perfect, the younger Dory Tunstall, right? And what advice would you give that young Dory to get you to your current level of success, but way faster? What would that advice be?
My advice to my younger self is really be yourself, be authentically yourself. Because I think when I was young, you know, like I'm very observant, right? And sometimes you observe people in order to figure out how you fit in, how do you imitate them.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were, you know, times where I was like, okay, it's a little bit difficult being Dory. Let me just imitate the people around me because that'll make it easier.
Sure.
Right? It'll make it easier for me.
Sure.
I won't stand out as much. And you know, and there's times where I've tried that. I've tried so hard and then it never works out, right? First of all, people can notice your inauthenticity, right? They notice it when you're being fake.
Sure.
And then the second part is that it feels bad to not be you, right? So, you know what, I think of my process of over the years, what I've learned is to be more deeply myself and to be comfortable in being more deeply myself. And actually understanding that everything that good has come out of my life has come from me being truly and deeply myself in that environment, in that context, right?
Right.
And that's how I'm able to bring impact and change, right?
Right. First of all, I'm an only child. And when you're an only child and you go to different schools and things like that, or going into a playground, you have to fit in quickly, right? Because you don't have your brother or sister that can love you as is on the playground. So I got really good at just fitting in quickly in these situations. And I thought it was like an art, right? And now what we're talking about is being authentically you. And that authentic you, no one can ever be that. And I really tell designers this now, like you can try to be like Michael Kors, but you're never going to be there. So you should actually be Karen Bryant, right? And do whatever that is. And then find a person that loves Karen Bryant's design as is. And then find a second person and a fourth person, just like Michael Kors did in this situation. And then same thing for you as an individual. Like when you go through your Instagram, you're like, you've always been authentic in my mind, right? It looks so strong. I can't wait for people to follow you. And so, man, oh man, if we could get younger people to really believe that, I don't know how we do it, but maybe it's a side of confidence or things like that. But younger people, if they could be authentically themselves and just live with it and get past that playground, that crazy playground.
Yeah.
where those people
well, and
are.
That's, yeah. And that's the thing where, again, you know, it's this is the part where I talk about, like, community. I've been really fortunate in some ways to, like, create from scratch the kinds of communities that would accept me for who I am.
Mm. Oh, that's good.
And thus be able to, in their own unique selves, mm-hmm. remind me to be my own unique self.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I think when you learn to do that, when you're, you know, the faster you're able to learn how to do that as a young person, the more, again, happy and joyful that you will be, the more expressive that you will be. And the advantage of if you want to take the fashion path is that people expect you in some ways to be unique and unusual mm-hmm. and creative. So they allow you to have a lot more space for that. Like if I wasn't dean of design, it would be much more challenging for me to rock up to an event in gold sequins thigh-high boots. But because I'm in this creative field, people, they're like, oh, that's just Dory. She's dean of design. What else do you expect her to wear?
Right. Oh, that's
awesome. And so if you're a creative person, like, express yourself.
Right.
Because that's the thing that will distinguish all that you make from everyone else.
Right.
I was reading this interview about OVO, right, the brand, because, mm-hmm. you know, Drake is the king of Toronto.
Yes.
Except for this weekend. The weekend is the king of Toronto this weekend.
This is correct.
And it was really interesting because they talk about their story where all the things that in Toronto is considered bad, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you have this, you know, Caribbean black culture instead of an African-American black culture
mm-hmm.
that, you know, everyone wears, like, you know, plaid and all these other things. They took everything that most of the time, if you're a young Torontonian, you're trying to get away from,
mm-hmm.
that they made that the center of their brand. It's like, winter is cold here, so we're not going to be doing this, like, hot fashion.
Right.
You know, we're going to keep it real, and we're going to be wearing our sweatshirts and our, you know, in our boots,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that created a unique brand, right, for them that helped them get past all of the confusion that everyone else was producing. But it also, again, as a city, it put Toronto on the map,
right.
a center of culture and music and even fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And so that ability to take what it is that is authentically yours and hold on to that and express that with no reservation,
right?
Proudly and authentically. That's how you break through.
That's
how you break through.
I'm going to have you talk to some of our boot campers because that speech right there is so important. Because again, they're always trying to be like other people way too much or other brands way too much. But in reality, boutique owners and individuals don't really want another that. They want a new this. And if you can create a new this that's actually unique and authentic, that's what people want to hear. That's what people want to experience. That's what I want to do, right? Mm-hmm. I can go get the old at the mall. Like, there's no question there. But man, I'd love to tell a story about some unique emerging designer doing something, you know, authentic and cool, and that even turns Dory Tunstall's head.
Yeah.
You know?
And there's lots of young designers that turn my head.
Right. man, share with our listeners, Dory, why you feel it's important to rewire.
Because conditions change. Mm-hmm. You change, mm-hmm. right? If you don't adapt yourself to those changes, then you're not going to flourish.
Mm-hmm.
If you maintain the same attitudes, they may not work in a new context.
Right.
So you always have to be ready to, again, if you know who you are, then you know what to maintain about yourself, and then you know what needs to grow and develop and change as you interact with new people, interact with a new place,
mm-hmm.
interact with new ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So you constantly have to, constantly have to sort of rewire.
Yeah, just like you did in Australia.
If you wanna level up, Right? Yes. If you want to level up, or even not level up, if you just want to level out, rewire.
Right. Where are you the most excited about for 2021, Dory? I mean, there's a lot, I'm sure, but what are you the most excited about?
I'm most excited about the new ways of thinking about fashion as we've now confronted COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
And some of this has to do with, you know, the changes that we're thinking around what is it that we actually need
mm-hmm.
versus what we want.
Mm-hmm.
The collapse of the seasons, because right now, you know, again, if you're on my Instagram, you can see I'm wearing summer clothing. Why? Because I haven't left my house in months.
Yeah.
So the notions of, like, what's a fashion season?
Mm-hmm.
How you present fashion, mm-hmm. right, is shifting. And again, in ways that doesn't mean that the old model of the fashion show is not grand, because it still is, but look at all the modifications that are being happened.
Right.
The technology that's being brought in, the beautiful cinematic approaches that people are taking to be able to share these ideas, to share this creativity. So I'm really excited to see how, again, the fashion industry is rewiring.
Right.
Through this experience where all the assumptions we've had about what fashion is and what it does and how it matters have been challenged by this new environment of COVID-19, has been challenged by the real awareness of our lack of diversity.
Right. Well, the world and fashion were both ripe for rewires. There's no question.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I feel a lot of people are going to be better on the other side of this rewire, quite frankly. And like you said, if you don't adapt on the other side of this rewire, you're going to be left holding the bag. And that's not a place mm-hmm. you want to be. So everyone should be adapting now at your own pace, which is fine. But that's where the real crux of everything is going to happen for 2021 and beyond. How can people find you on social media? Or anywhere.
So on Instagram, I'm at DeanDory_OCADU, OCADU.
Okay.
But if you do a hashtag DeanDrag, you'll find me faster.
Okay. Oh, I love it.
I'm on LinkedIn under Dory Tunstall. I'm under Twitter. I'm Dory DeAnthro, so Dory_DeAnthro from Anthropology, Design Anthropology, so Dory DeAnthro. What else am I on? On Facebook is only for family, so you can't reach me on Facebook.
Well, as always on Fashion Rewire, you can upload a free blueprint of Dory Tunstall's podcast today. You can follow her 1-2-3 action steps or simply be inspired by what Dory has done and is going to do in the future. Simply go to Instagram @ Fashion Rewired and send me a direct message, and I'll send you a free blueprint of Dory Tunstall. Dory, did you enjoy today?
I did. I can't believe it's over.
I know. But we're going to have you back on because we're just digging into these different things, and I feel like an anthropologist myself, and I've evolved in this short amount of time. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And we're out.
Thank you for joining us for our weekly 30-minute podcast focused on the business of fashion. Fashion Rewired is all about the successful transformation of your mind, perspective, and daily approach to your fashion brand. Make sure you listen next week for the Fashion Rewired podcast with Brian Hill.